Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to revisit a conversation that we had some time ago with Anne Hatcher. Anne is a senior consultant at Thrivance. She's based in Nashville. She has over 25 years experience in all areas of human capital. And before joining Thrivance, she was the chief HR officer at WellPath, which is a $2 billion private equity-backed healthcare company. She has some great thoughts to share around lessons that she's learned in her career that I think will be helpful for you. Looking forward to today's conversation with Anne. Well, I guess first off, could you give us a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career background?
Okay. Yeah. And I was saying earlier today, I have had my whole career in HR. I started as a recruiter, was my first HR job. I went to Nations Bank, now it's Bank of America, right out of school in the management training program, but wound up in recruiting and have stayed in HR ever since. So I didn't mean to, probably like a lot of us in our careers, right? Sure. But I wouldn't trade it. It's been great. And I've had a great journey. I say, Mark, that I've done all the good things in HR. So I've mostly focused on talent and culture, leadership development, recruiting, retention kinds of projects. So I spent a huge part of my career at HCA, based here in Nashville, a large hospital company, and then led HR for another healthcare company based here in Nashville, WellPath, for about 3 years. And for the last year, I've been in consulting. And what's super fun about that is I get to meet a lot of people, a lot of different contexts, different industries, and it's just been fascinating.
So I like to ask this question to most every guest. If you were able to spin back time, knowing what you know now, and give some advice to a 22-year-old Anne, what advice would you give her?
Yeah. Well, I feel like people gave me a lot of good advice that I didn't listen to. So I don't know that I would listen to myself. You know what I'm saying? If I were to go back in time, possibly I would try to force myself to be a little more reflective. I think my personality type is one of being a pleaser. You and I talked about personalities, and I was recently exposed to the Enneagram. And so I'm a type 3 in Enneagram. And so I'm really oriented toward how do you get an A? Right? How do I get an A in this class? How do I get an A in my job? How do I get an A in my career? And here's the thing, we don't give ourselves A's, right? Other people give us A's. And it's taken me a long time to realize that's probably not the most fulfilling way to find your life's work and your satisfaction in your work. So maybe I would try to beat myself over the head around that.
So, I've talked to a number of people about career management, and sometimes people are like, well, I didn't really set out to do what I'm doing now. And so I didn't really have that overall plan. But talk a little bit about just the importance of thinking through kind of career, knowing when, things aren't working. And I think we talked in an earlier conversation, knowing when to fold them.
Know when to fold them. Yeah. When to walk away. I used to facilitate a DDI class on career management. And one of the pieces was, how do you know when it's time to even just wonder, should I make a change? And there are clues like, my company has new ownership, right? I have a new boss, or I might get a new boss. Those kinds of things are just great natural breaks to tell you, should I let circumstances manage my career, or should I take charge? And so, like I shared, I was at HCA for a long, long time, and it was great. I changed jobs every 3 years, which was very energizing to me. And I knew we were going to have a change in the chief HR officer role. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to have a new boss. Maybe I'll be the boss. I didn't think I was going to be the boss. So I'm going to have a new boss regardless. Do I want to let that happen to me, or do I want to explore? you know, what some other options are out there. And it was the first time really that I went looking for a job from college. I probably should have explored that sooner. Yeah. So it's hard to know, though, right? With hindsight's 2020. But you know who does know when it's time for you to change jobs? The people you live with. The people you complain to. Sure. Maybe that's the thing, is to have your board of directors and empower them to tell you when it's time for you to make a change.
So you talked about kind of a personal board of directors. Did you seek people out purposely as far as to be that for you, or did it just kind of happen by chance?
Yeah, I think I have a great group of friends and colleagues that I have. So I went to college quite a while ago, and I still have great friends from college who have known me all along. So every step in my journey and I in their journey, they were reflecting back to me, hey, you know, at another point, you seem really unhappy and we're kind of tired of hearing you whine about it. But I didn't say that. So I think just those friends and trusted colleagues. But I know people who have been very purposeful about a board of directors. And I think it's the kind of thing that can supercharge your career if you're focused on that.
I think a lot of times people forget about kind of their network of people, relationships, people that you've kept in touch with.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's easy to get caught up in your career and forget about those relationships. Mm-hmm. Have you purposely sought out as far as networking opportunities to continue to build that network of people?
Yeah, I think maybe that's why I enjoyed HR so much, is it makes you do that on a regular basis. It's just part of recruiting. And I have always valued the relationships that I have in the workplace. There have been times when I've invested more in relationships in the community and professional, and sometimes less, right? I mean, there's just, sure, that's just life. But I have found it to be really rewarding. We all have time to have coffee or a lunch or tea in the afternoon or whatever your thing is, once a week with someone. And I have found, Mark, I'm sure you found this too, when you put into the universe what you need, you know, through your network, people want to help you. It's really the most amazing thing. And they'll make connections for you. And then all you have to do is say, what can I do for you? And you'll find a way to serve other people.
Yeah, great advice. So thinking back to kind of that first leadership position, we have a number of first-time leaders that listen to this podcast, as well as first-time CEOs. We talked a little bit about the topic of setting expectations as you're moving into kind of that leadership role. Can you talk a little bit about that and the importance of setting expectations as a leader?
Yeah.
For your team?
My first experience with having a leader report to me who was a pretty strong leader. So I think the biggest challenge is when you become a leader of leaders for the first time. So you start as an individual contributor, and then you're a leader of individual contributors. And that has its challenges, but usually it's a subject that you know, right? So you can do it. Then when you're promoted to a leader of leaders, you're getting into your area of incompetence, right? So really it's leadership is what you're doing, not so much the work. And I had someone that I inherited onto the team who was really struggling. And I complained to my boss about this person and he had hired this individual. So I said, it's your fault. Could you please, you started this. Could you take care of this? And he said, no, I can't, Anne. And your problem is you are not letting this individual fail. And I thought, wow, that's like, oh, I can't do that because that reflects on me. He said, then you will never be able to fix this problem because you keep going in there and scooping it up and fixing it. And you're just putting it on yourself. And I thought, wow, that is just really tough. So I let this person fail. And then we were able to coach. Now, looking back on that again, what I wasn't doing was setting expectations with this person. And it's really hard, right? It's not only the what by when, but it's also the how. here's a level at which it needs to happen. I wish I had had project management training, you know, earlier on. I think that's a great skill for leaders, especially in a remote environment. So I think that's what you and I were talking about. So many leaders are struggling in the remote environment if they were used to having people in the office. Well, that's because you're not setting expectations. Here's the work. What can be done by when? What's the level of quality at which it needs to be done? How will we know we're doing that? How will you get in touch with me if you need my help? Go do. Let me know what support you need. Sure. It sounds simple, but it's really not simple.
Yeah, right. I think we talked a little bit about that, you know, is you're in a management or leadership role that you've got different levels of experience. You've got some people that have just come into the organization, maybe new grads that might be on the team versus people that have been in roles for quite a few years. What are some of the generational differences of managing people at different stages, different generations? Talk a little bit about that, just some of your experience around that.
Okay. So we're having that right now. I have a colleague who's probably the same generation that I am. And so we sit in these cubicles right next to each other. And then we have two much younger colleagues who sit real close to us who are on a different team. And just if you looked at our workspaces, you would know which was which. Our workspaces, there's a lot of paper, a lot of sticky notes in different places. We share some office supplies because we love office supplies. If you look at the other two, they are equally busy and they have nothing on their desk. So I think a big part of the different generations in the workplace is, first of all, let's just have fun with it, right? Just be human about it. I say things to these younger colleagues, and after I say it, I say, oh, that was my mom voice. I'm so sorry. Like, yeah. I'm like, but you're sounding like a kid right now. So let's, you know, let's meet in the middle. We all have to meet each other where they are. And I think it's just getting a level deeper with people. Like, why are you here? What are you looking for from work? How can I accompany you on that journey? How can you help me on this journey? And as we meet the needs of the different generations, we all benefit. If what we're really focused on right now for a new generation is flexible work and meeting their needs around mental health, well, that's going to help me in the workplace as well, because we're all humans.
Yeah. So as a part of your CHRO and led kind of that human resource function within the company, talk about the importance of creating organizational alignment. I think you did a talk on that a while back, or at least what I saw online. But any ideas or thoughts around that of how to create kind of more organizational alignment?
In my last employer, we used the OKR framework, objectives and key results. I found that to be a super powerful way to make sure that a leadership team is all on the same page. So we operated around, we had like five pillars, and the pillars didn't change that often, maybe every 15 to 18 months. But then the strategies or the key results that you were trying to get under those would change as you would achieve something, then you could move on to the next thing. Because business moves really fast. You know, three-year planning cycles, five-year planning cycles don't make a difference. And we really saw that, of course, during COVID. And then in my case, in the labor crisis that followed that, we were on very short sprints to make some traction and then get to the next level. And what I loved about that was I was able then to go back to my team and say, this is what's important to the company right now. So 80-20 rule, you know, if you have things that you can put on the back burner, it's not important as these things. So let's align around these.
Yeah, that's good. Every leader needs to stay in touch with what's going on, both in the business world as well as you know, outside interests. But are there books that you recommend to leaders that they should put on their reading list?
You know, I saw this on your list, Mark, and I'm just going to, I don't know, maybe some people who hear this will be relieved. I just don't love to read leadership books. in business books. I'm sorry. I did hear of something that I do want to read today, some of Joseph Campbell's work around the hero's journey and, you know, thinking about mythology. So I am very interested in human behavior, why we behave the way we do. I read a lot of fiction. I think the most important thing is to read. Just get out of your own head, your own circumstance, your own company, and borrow perspectives from other places.
Yeah, no, that's good. Any quotes that you refer to?
Okay, so this is from, I can't remember the name of the movie now, like the Marigold Hotel. But the quote is something like, everything works out in the end. And if it hasn't worked out, it isn't the end. I just think it's such a hopeful phrase. And I really do believe it's true. I don't believe that things happen for a reason. Like that's a sad universe. But I do believe that with help, we can find reason in the things that happen. And through that, you know, find the other side.
So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
So I do love to read. I love my downtime. I'm a closet introvert, so I could be very happy on, I have this restoration hardware couch, you know, that like you can become part of. And so I like to get in there. But I just love to be with my family too, and in the outdoors and whatever we can do together as a family. There's a lot of cooking that happens in our family too.
Favorite dish to make.
Oh, I don't do the cooking, but I love for it to be done. So my husband's great at smoking meat and whatever he produces, I'm a fan of.
Good. So any parting advice you'd give to a new leader?
I have had some recent conversations with a new leader who she seems to feel very overwhelmed. And there's something about finding the right balance between being vulnerable and authentic on the one hand, and then the fake it till you make it on the other hand, right? And so I think it's all just that journey to find your voice, get some trusted advisors who will help reflect back to you when something feels right, and just keep practicing. It's okay. We'll make mistakes. Mistakes are being made on us. We make mistakes on other people. Just own it and just keep trying.
So how would somebody learn more about your work and what you're about?
Oh, great. Thanks for asking. So you can find us at thrivence.com. That's thrivence.com. And we have examples of some of our projects and bios of our team and links to come talk to us.
Great. Well, thanks again for spending some time with us. I appreciate your insights and wish you continued success in all you're doing.
Thank you, Mark. Same to you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.